sales win rates have plummeted to a mere 17%, and outdated technology and tedious manual processes are to blame. Meanwhile, managers lack the visibility they need to hold their teams accountable. But imagine a world in which these crippling issues are solved automatically. Revenue.io automates the most frustrating parts of sales so reps can focus on what they do best, selling. Completely automate pre-call research, logging conversation data in your CRM, writing post-conversation recap emails, and prioritized outreach. And as reps book more meetings and close more deals, managers gain the real-time insight they need to scale what's working across their entire team. Ready to say goodbye to tedious sales processes and watch your win rate soar? Head over to revenue.io to learn more.
So just embracing the idea that this is an obstacle, clearly, but there's so much you can learn from it. There's ways that you can reframe this conversation, but also the relationship with the customer moving forward and how you're going to respond to what might not have been a great call. And too often, I think in sales and in life, we just like, oh, that sucked. Like, I'm just going to go, you know, whatever, right? And sort of push it aside and not embrace the hard stuff. And a lot of times the hard stuff are those hard calls.
Hi, friends. Welcome to the Sales Enablement Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Paul. That was Dan Horowitz and Tom Eschbacher. Dan is a senior sales director with LinkedIn. Tom is a senior sales manager for LinkedIn Marketing Solutions. Now, this is a fun conversation today because we're talking about something that's a little bit different than the topics we normally talk about. We're talking about stoicism in sales and the lessons that sellers can learn from the teachings of the Stoics. I know many of you have already read Ryan Holiday's book, The Daily Stoic. Well, we dive right into learning what Stoicism is and how it originated. It's always good to have the origin story. And sort of frame it, here's a quote from Marcus Aurelius, who was a Stoic. All you need are these in life. Certainty of judgment in the present moment, action for the common good in the present moment, and an attitude of gratitude in the present moment for anything that comes your way. And then we talk about the principles of Stoicism that can be applied to selling. Dan and Tom boil them down to three actions: control your perceptions, direct your actions, and willingly accept. So we're going to then dive into the details of how you apply each of these three to your selling. So we get into all of that and much, much more. But before we get to Dan and Tom, I want to remind you to subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen to it. And if you subscribe, we'd certainly appreciate it if you could leave us a review. Give us your feedback about how we're doing. So thank you very much. All right, let's jump into it. Dan and Tom, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Andy.
Thanks, Andy.
It's good to be here.
Yeah, pleasure to have you. So Dan Horowitz, why don't you start off? Tell us what you do at LinkedIn.
Happy to, Andy. So I've been at LinkedIn for about 6 years, and I run a number of our North American sales teams within the marketing solutions part of LinkedIn. So a number of different business units at LinkedIn where the team that works with marketers sell advertising natively on the platform.
Got it. And Tom, how about you?
Yeah, so similar to Dan, we work closely together in the marketing solutions department, and I lead an org focused on helping high growth startups find success, acquire customers, and drive ROI with our ad platform.
Perfect. Okay. I'm excited because we're going to talk about something we've never talked about on this show, nearly 1,000 episodes, which is fantastic, is we're going to talk about stoicism and sales. So now by stoicism, easy for me to say, is, yeah, we're not talking about the stoicism that I knew when I was growing up in the Midwest, which was, you know, we hold in our emotions and we don't talk about anything. We're going to talk about something different. So either one of you, let's start with Dan. So tell us about stoicism.
Tom is actually our best intro for a little bit of history on stoicism. We'll kick it to Tom.
Yeah. So, you know, 300 BC, a wealthy merchant is making a voyage and he shipwrecks outside of Greece and loses everything. He's stranded from home. Makes his way into a bookstore in Athens and starts paging through philosophy pamphlets and realizes that what he thought was an obstacle in losing everything he had was in fact an opportunity. And he goes down to the Stoa and begins speaking with other philosophers of the day and forms this philosophy of Stoicism that becomes one of the dominant philosophies for nearly 500 years, influences everyone from emperors like Marcus Aurelius to impoverished people. A famous Stoic philosopher is Epictetus, who spent the first 30 years of his life in slavery. And it really appealed, this philosophy really appealed for its practicality and the avoidance of negative feelings and emotions, helping people in the pursuit of the good life.
Okay. So how has that now sort of migrated into sales? I mean, tell us sort of the basic tenets that and we'll get into the details of it, but just on an introduction of the tenets that are important for salespeople.
Yeah. So, I was listening to the podcast you did with Ryan Gottfredson again recently, and he talked a lot about success mindsets, right?
Yep. And yeah, I love his stuff.
And so a lot of how Dan and I approach Stoic principles builds off of what Ryan was talking about. So mindsets are things that we can change fairly easily. And we feel in Stoicism, there are several principles that sales professionals can adopt to help them, lay the groundwork for a successful career. And so a couple of them that we frequently go through and we can, dive in today in depth is how you perceive things, how you accept things, and how you observe things. And they each have applications in our daily lives as B2B sellers.
Right. So in general, one of the main things seems to be that, and I've, read some of Ryan Holiday's, his Daily Stoic and so on, is that it's about focusing our energies on what's under our control. And not wasting on those things that aren't under our control.
It's 100% right. But I think where it really connects to sales mindset, and coming back to many of your podcasts, there's so many wonderful discussions around sales competencies. We have our own sales competencies at LinkedIn that are fantastic. Sales methodologies, how you apply those competencies as effectively as possible to drive value for your customer. But if you don't have the right mindset, you can't be effective as you could be, because you are trying to control for things that are actually outside of your control.
So right.
Typically a salesperson might be thinking about trying to hit or exceed their quota as being something that they think is in their control. When in reality, and we can certainly talk about it, it's the thing that's the least in their control. It's their mindset and the actions that they take that are informed by that mindset that give them the best opportunity. So you can talk to reps about, hey, focus on inputs versus outputs, see every obstacle as an opportunity. But if you do that within the framework of a storytelling philosophy like Stoicism, you actually get people to remember, you get people to engage, you get people to ask questions, you get people to continuously learn. And so they're learning the things that you might hope they learned in a discussion about mindset, but they're doing it in a way that sticks with them and that hopefully they can continue to advance their interest and knowledge in the topic as well.
Yeah, I mean, this plays into an idea that, that I'm pushing that I think is really missing in sales, and I've brought it up on podcasts before in the past, is that we assume when we bring people into sales, especially younger people that are starting their career, and we ask them to do these things that are sort of require a fair amount of just sort of basic human skills, let alone sales competencies, that we assume they have those human skills. And so what we do then is we just throw them into sales training. And then they wonder why they're struggling. Or if it had, and it may not happen to them right away. It could happen to them after 5 years or 10 years. I've encountered people that reach out to me for help that been in business for a couple decades, and they're struggling with this. And what's missing is just some of these core human skills, not sales competencies. And so seems to me like we need to invest, whether it's, you know, talking about some philosophy, and, you know, Stoicism's not a religious thing. It's not offensive, you know, to anybody of particular faith. But don't we need to spend more time? I guess my question is before we teach people how to become salespeople, is help them become better humans first?
I think that one of the things that you need to do before you can become a better human, which you need to do before you can become a better seller, is you still have to have the right mindset.
Yeah.
You know, I tell a story, which Tom knows really well, about, and I see that I got to work with it about 3 years ago, and he'd actually been a seller for about 5 years, but had come onto a new team and didn't have the best onboarding onto that team. And by the time he and I started working together, you know, he was pacing at like 40% to the quarter with like 6 weeks left to go in the quarter. And I remember asking him, you know, when you come into work in the morning, what's the first thing that you focus on? And he said, I focus on my number. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, how's that going? Right. And he's like, it's terrible. And so you start to unwind that and start thinking about what are things that you actually could focus on that if you could repeat over and over and over again, whether it's how you prepare for a meeting, the kind of questions that you ask the meeting, your level of curiosity in the meeting, mm-hmm. How you prioritize your time, your interest and passion for the book that you're working on. If you do that and get better at that every day, that's all within your control, right? And so I think that's what Tom and I try and get people to understand, because we just presented this topic to our virtual sales kickoff, and Tom likes to start by asking people to annotate, because it's obviously all virtual, to annotate on PowerPoint in Zoom, you know, whether you are in control or not in control, and we start with your quota. And what Tom, about 90% of the people, right, say that they think they're in control of whether they're going to hit their quota, right? Because, you know, they're forecasting, they're reporting, they think that they can control that outcome, and really they can only control the inputs.
Right.
Whether a customer buys from them, whether they leave, whether they have a relationship with another platform, whatever it might be that causes them to buy or not buy from that seller, is totally out of their control.
Yeah, it boils down to the idea of do what you must, let happen what may. If you're controlling your inputs and doing the right thing, so your proposal, mm-hmm. you're tying it to customer value, you're including social proof, you have relevant case studies that you're, you know, delivering to a customer when you're making your recommendation, those are all things that are within your control, right? Because you control your thoughts and your actions. So those are all your actions, but you cannot control how your prospect receives that proposal. And ultimately that is what yep. will impact your number. So like the idea of outcome independence is one that we really try to harp on to our reps to get them to focus on improving their competencies and mastering their inputs.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great point. And first of all, it's one I'm sure that scares the bejesus out of a lot of sellers when they really think about it, is because I didn't do it today, but I did it a couple years ago. You know, I Googled controlling the sales process. Yeah, you know, there were like 300 million returns on it. And it's like, This is sort of the problem that exists in sales, is we continue to perpetuate these myths that, well, they're myths, right? It's like one of my favorites is, you know, the myth of the closer. As I tell people, so in business-to-business sales, you know, you're selling to the enterprise. So how often have you been in the room when the customer makes the decision? Oh, you're the closer. Okay, I got it. Yeah. It's like... And yet we continue to train people to believe this. In fact, you know, in SaaS, we recruit whole class of salespeople and call them closers. And we wonder why, you know, performance, at least in business-to-business sales, is you know, not good, at least based on the statistics we see. It's like, how do we change, you know, just some of these myths, these beliefs, these mindsets? Because I agree with you. I mean, I don't know if I came to it naturally or philosophically or whatever, but it's always been sort of my approach, as you talked about, is all I can control is me. And I want to try to become the best version of myself, because I increase the probabilities that how I'm perceived by the buyer is better. But yeah, I can't control that. I can just do the best that I can do.
Yeah, one of the things we talk about in this presentation is I think people think they can control the sale by talking, right? And all of the research that's been done shows that the reps that are most successful actually are far better listeners, right? And so we sort of share the stoic wisdom around listening twice as much as you talk, and it gets people to at least begin to start letting go of thinking that they do need to control the conversation by talking.
Mm-hmm.
We all know the more that you're talking, the less you're listening, the less they're actually telling you about their problems, the less you're actually asking layered questions, the less that they're actually building a relationship with you. And then you may leave the sales call thinking that it was terrific because you spent the whole time talking, but you likely learned not as much as you could have and didn't advance the conversation in a way that was productive. But that again, that idea of them thinking that it's their job to get to the solution selling and to really pitch their solution versus spending the time listening
right.
is another one that really kind of hurts their brains a little bit when we first talk about it, which is why speaking about how this is something that's actually been around for thousands of years, this philosophy of listening more than you talk isn't something that sales managers and sales coaches created, but it's something that that works in your life in general.
Yeah, Andy, you mentioned earlier, yeah. You know, being human is kind of the heart of being an effective salesperson. And you know, think about the time in your personal life where you spent 30 minutes with someone and they talked for 25 minutes. Was that a great experience for you? Probably not. And so, as a salesperson, we want to flip that script as much as possible and let the customer talk and explain their thoughts and their situation. And so the idea here, Marcus Aurelius has this quote, practice really hearing what people say, do your best to get inside their minds. As most of us are still selling in a remote virtual environment, active listening becomes trickier. We have fewer physical cues to key off of. And so it becomes mm-hmm. important to listen for the silence. When someone stops speaking, you know, golden silence, count to three in your head to see if they're going to continue expanding upon their thoughts before jumping in and just, you know, listen to understand. Don't listen for your turn to speak.
Well, I think that's critical, right? I think we have this big gap, and I call it the gap between knowing and understanding. It's because what we do is we deputize sellers to go out and do discovery, quote unquote, do discovery. And yeah, they either through following a script or just through habit, they have questions they ask and they, you know, rampage through these questions. And they collect this basket full of facts, knowledge, but they don't understand anything. Right. And this is, you know, to the point that the quote about Aurelius is, how do we get people into the mindset to say, okay, well, yeah, we need to ask that extra question, right? We can't just take what the customer says at face value. Our job is to understand, not just know, it's to understand. And this is, again, it's a combination of mindset. Yes, it's certainly a competency, but people have to, we have to make the sellers understand this is the job.
Yeah, sometimes we've leverage a tool like Ring DNA to be able to listen for just the turn of phrase of tell me more. Because mm-hmm. we teach tell me more
right.
from a layered question perspective. And so it's actually an alert that our managers will get when someone says tell me more on a call, because we
right.
want every call. So even if you have no, even if you can't think of a great layered question to ask after your
Absolutely.
Customer tells you something, if you just say, that's really interesting, tell me more about whatever you just said, they'll just keep talking and they'll tell you more stuff, right? It's not like you have to have a special notebook of layered questions, which they all want once you start training on layered questions. What kind of layered questions are the best layered questions?
Well, that's right. Yeah. Tell me more. And what else can you tell me about that from Michael Bungay Stanier's book those are great questions. And it addresses this point where, you know, we get this feedback from studies that Gartner and other people do that, you know, C-level people don't feel they get value from the conversations they have with sales, you know, B2B salespeople. And there's this underlying assumption in that sort of that sellers need to have a certain level of knowledge to have these conversations with those people. And my belief is, in my own experience, is, well, no, you don't. You just need to have the curiosity to be able to do that. You need to be able to keep asking the questions, tell me more, what else can you tell me about that, until you do reach that level of understanding. I've never run into a customer yet who says, well, that's a stupid question. Or if they see that you're, you know, sincerely interested in learning, they'll tell you the answers.
Exactly. I mean, what back to your humanity piece, right? What do humans love doing? They love talking, right? So the more opportunities you give the customer to show that you're engaged, show that you're curious, to show that you want to learn more, but they're doing the talking, they're going to think it's a great call.
Sure.
We have tried to remove the list of discovery questions to just two or three. And they have to be different each time. They're based upon the prep that you've done, the value methodology that you've worked on to understand what you think is important to the customer. But like any conversation, it's gotta iterate from where it starts. And so, yeah, tell me more is something we ask for on every call and get notifications when it happens.
Yeah. So after controlling your perceptions about what you can control or not, then you talk about acceptance. And so let's dive into acceptance, because I thought that was interesting. I don't know, Tom.
Yeah, this is probably my favorite aspect of Stoicism, and one that impacts me both as a salesperson and especially as a father of two kids under two. Amor fati, right? So not merely bear what is necessary, but love it and try to accept the situation and find the opportunity in it. So the Stoics have this phrase, the art of acquiescence. And I joke that I'm more of a math guy, so I call it the arithmetic of acquiescence. And you start with what might be your initial reaction to something, and you divide it by a reframe. And that's how you get to acquiescence. So in that way, we're reframing obstacles as opportunities. And to ground this into sales, think about, we're just starting a new half. Think about a salesperson who either joins a new company or moves on to a new book, and they get into the book and they look around and it's filled with dormant accounts or customers that weren't quite as high potential as they might have felt they were sold on. The initial reaction is, this is a mess. And what did I get myself into? But here the Stoics would counsel, reframe to find the opportunity. So you'd say, this is an opportunity for me to demonstrate my turnaround skills, my sales excellence, an opportunity to experiment with new tactics. Another acceptance tool here is to turn have-tos into get-tos. So your CSM goes out on leave, and the initial thought might be, I have to cover all of their work for the next month. Change that to a get to. I get to become more of an expert on the other part of our service model. Have to's to get to's is a really big, hack in having a positive growth mindset.
Right. Well, I mean, on the surface, it sort of sounds like sort of the half glass is the glass half empty or half full type approach. But it's more than that, though.
It is. And so I'll give a real world 1 hour ago example here, where a rep of mine had a difficult call with a customer, and it didn't go exactly the way she had planned. And she said to me, that was somewhere between a bad and really bad call. And so I'm thinking, well, what's the reframe here? And the reframe was, you're going to learn a lot from that call. So looking at it from that angle, it'll be one of the best calls you have all year. And yeah, it might feel like some mind games, but if you lean into it enough, it will help you have just more positive experiences and stay down on yourself for a shorter amount of time and become more resilient.
Yeah, I mean, I sort of look at it like behavior change, right? Is that, if you look at habits, there's a trigger, right, for a habit, habitual behavior. There's this emotional response, is people's, sort of immediate impulse about what to do. But if they acknowledge that they have a choice about how to react to that, which could be the reframe, and then choose a different behavior, then yeah, it's sort of what you're talking about, right? It's and you do that enough, then this starts becoming second nature for you.
Well, and Andy, you talk a lot about on the podcast that we don't do a great job of training sales managers, and you know, it's the reason we actually started this work with sales managers before we even brought it to ICs, because it would be very difficult for that rep in the moment to reframe. I mean, she's relatively inexperienced. She feels personally like she let maybe Tom down or let the customer down, right? And I think if the manager doesn't understand the importance of mindset and the importance of getting her to productively absorb what just happened in a way that she gets better from it, as opposed to the many non-reframes that I think happen in a lot of those conversations, like you got to do better next time, or you know, everybody has a tough one, don't worry about it, right? There's nothing that she's learning from that. She's not going to immediately like get better and also think that like she actually did learn something from it, which again, it's hard to reframe individually. So this idea of philosophy teachers, all of these different scholars, like it is something that needs to be taught. Something currently as an individual, you're constantly learning, you're constantly reading, you're trying to get better, but having someone who can observe and who can help with that reframe, it's so critical. So yeah, that's why we started with our sales managers. And I had one of my managers just this week, we kind of have a part of our one-on-one where he talks about how he's been coaching his ICs and he's just started calling it his reframes, right? Because it's so much of sales coaching. And being a sales manager is helping those reps through, because you're going to have a lot of tough calls. You're going to have a lot of moments that don't go as well as you if you wanted to, but you've got to reframe and get better from it.
Well, I think part of the reframe, part of the role the manager plays in the reframe is that, you know, slight example Tom said before is shifting, reframing an I have to I get to, is to make them, make for the managers to make the ICs feel comfortable that, you know, this is not, there's not a downside, right, to the I get to, right? It's because I think that's always that fear. That's why people sort of linger in the I have to side, because it feels safer to them. And somehow you sort of, as managers, you have to say, yeah, you get to, and this that's a positive.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's the other part of this perceive concept, and you mentioned Ryan Holiday in his books, right? This is, it's the obstacle is the way, right? Like you want to have hard calls. You want to be challenged, because that's the only way you're going to get better. And that's the only way you're going to have the kind of breakthrough conversations that you want to get to that lead to lots of opportunities for your book. So just embracing the idea that this is an obstacle, clearly, but there's so much you can learn from it. There's ways that you can reframe this conversation, but also the relationship with the customer moving forward, and how you're going to respond to what might not have been a great call. And too often, I think in sales and in life, we just like, oh, that sucked. Like I'm just going to go, you know, whatever. Right. And to sort of push it aside and not embrace the hard stuff. And a lot of times the hard stuff are those hard calls.
Another example that we talk about in this acceptance umbrella, and a situation I'll be familiar to probably all of your listeners, is getting a quota that feels high, and you know,
a universal experience.
Yes, the initial reaction is something like, I just want, you know, one period of normal quota expectations. You can't control that in your current reality. Like, sure, you could leave and try to find a new job with lower quota expectations. I don't think you're going to find that. So instead, the guidance here would be to reframe, instead of just want this, like want what you have, because that is going to help you, you know, open up more pathways to success than the closed-minded just want, feel like you're getting dragged along to a number that you didn't have any control over.
Yeah. I mean, it's, so I wonder, how does this serve? Balance against, because you're talking about controlling inputs, right? And I think one of the big issues in my mind that I see in talking to sellers and everybody that I engage with on LinkedIn is they don't feel like they have control over the inputs, right? That you know, we're increasingly, you know, here are these activity metrics. Here are these, you know, here's the one way you're going to do this. Here's our process, as opposed to, yeah, people owning, becoming the best version of themselves, finding their, you know, the way that works best for them, that's more aligned with who they are and the strengths they have. Yeah, how do we reconcile that?
Well, you probably won't be surprised to realize that Tom and I are not big believers in highly regimented sale processes. But we also...
Well, believe it or not, no, I didn't know that. That this wasn't a setup question, but go ahead.
But we also work in a media business, which is different than SaaS. And I think it gives a little bit more freedom of motion within the kind of opportunities that our sellers have. That said, you know, again, we have sort of our own core sales competencies. We have ways that we hope that our reps will be running calls, but within that, we really do create the space for them to own that call and to feel like they're making it part of themselves, right? That they're demonstrating their own curiosity, they've done their own research, they're prepared their own questions, so that they can really feel empowered to connect with that customer. You know, I think when you're in a more SDR drop off to this person, to that person kind of relationship, kind of sales motion, there is a little bit less of that opportunity to own your book and to feel like you have a sense of opportunity on each call that you're on, and can kind of create that opportunity a bit from your own individuality. But certainly from the world that Tom and I try and create with our teams, we want to empower and we want to train and make sure they understand the foundations, but that they sort of shine through with their own individuality on these calls. Because again, it's really the only way to connect and to create opportunity with customers, or it's the best way.
Yeah, I mean, I would make the argument that notwithstanding the business, that the same opportunity exists within the SaaS world. It's just, yeah, people have fallen into this pattern that they think works, but when you really look underneath, it's not working. And yeah, here's something that I think is a sort of an avenue that may, because it, you know, resonates with me, it sort of aligns with my own belief is you know, in the power of the individual, right? Because everything starts with the individual, whether it's the individual seller or the individual customer. It's that connection between the two that makes things happen. And yet we seem to be living in a world where increasingly people want to sort of minimize the importance of that.
What do you think, Tom?
I think even within a highly regimented sales motion, there are opportunities for experimentation and individuality that you're mentioning, Andy. So Dan and I do our best, at least, to create an environment of psychological safety and experimentation, where, you know, one of our pet terms is explore and exploit, where mm-hmm. you know, explore a new avenue, and then once you find some success, let's see how we can exploit it a little more. But take an SDR, for example, who might be working on with a set number of scripts and feel like they have limited autonomy or ability to impact them. Like, step back, and our hope would be that they're able to find ways that they can shape their own individual inputs that can manifest a better, you know, reality for not just them, but then the broader organization. So leaning in with a learning mindset and experimenting mm-hmm. Is something that all sellers can do, even if it feels like they're, you know, getting, you know, highly regimented behaviors like put on from high.
Yeah. And I don't think it's a problem that's exclusively for SDRs in a SaaS world. I think it's for the AEs as well.
Yeah, just an example. And,
yeah. I mean, it's almost more understandable with SDRs, and yeah, it's, I'm not shy about saying, I think that's more of a marketing role than a sales role anyway. But yeah, I mean, certainly either SDR or AEs is, yeah, there's definitely room. And I think it's incumbent upon managers and us as an industry, as, you know, senior leaders, as like Dan and yourself, is to empower these frontline managers to operate less from a position of fear, right? Because I think what they're trying to control, and this is why we get a lot of these behaviors, is that they're in this control mindset. and they don't really understand they're not really in control and that there is a path that, that would lead to better performance if they understood that.
100%. And I think, you know, you and I, Andy, are both sort of followers also of Charlie Green and sort of becoming a trusted mm-hmm. seller, a trusted advisor. I think the more that you try and control, right, the harder it is to get anyone to trust you, whether it's in the first 20 seconds of an SDR trying to call you or an email,
yep.
Or in a longer term sales cycle, right? And so demonstrating some vulnerability, demonstrating curiosity, learning mindset, mm-hmm. Telling a customer that they might not be the right fit for what you thought you were there to talk about.
Right.
Incredible opportunity. So I think giving our ICs and our sales managers who are coaching those ICs the understanding that we want them to represent our platform and the opportunities with customers in a way that we're going to work together for years. And there's no reason to sell with urgency or fear in a way that's going to jeopardize our opportunity to help them
right.
find value on our platform. So it's something that the other thing is, like, we're in a, I mean, I know you've talked about this on some podcasts recently too, but we're in a war for talent, right? Like,
yeah,
you know, to get to encourage our AEs and CSMs to spend time in our company and really learn and develop and grow, we have to do those things, right? We have to give them the freedom to make mistakes, to reframe, to get better, to feel like they're getting great sales coaching from their manager. So if they feel like they're coming in to be controlled and to control their prospects and their customers, they're just going to go somewhere else. I mean, there's just too much opportunity out there.
Yeah. Yeah. Or if they come in, well, you wouldn't hire them if they came in with the mindset that that's what they're doing.
Right. We interview, we interview, right, 100% behavioral these days,
right,
to try and find people who are curious, who are creative, who want to be coached, right? That's something that Tom and I do a lot in our interviews
yep.
these days is actually coach them within the interview process. So yeah, if we then flip the script and are managing through fear, yeah, it would make no sense.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think that managing through fear is just sort of the baseline, unfortunately, in too many companies, is especially as, again, as we become more dependent sort of on activities and metrics that are more activity-based, is if you have a class of managers who are under-enabled, right, who are not given the tools, who are not, you know, because most companies aren't LinkedIn, they don't have the resources to do that, or they don't invest the resources to do that, and then they promote, you know, relatively inexperienced sellers into management roles, and they're hanging on for dear life. And so we wonder why they sort of have this, they default to this fear-based behavior, and you know, let me see what, if they can't see a metric for it, they don't know what to do.
Well, bring it back to Stoicism, which is free for everyone to access. Right? Yeah. You don't need any resources to read meditations, right? But the things that you fear are the things that are outside of your control, right? That
yeah.
the time you spend fearing, the time you spend worrying, the time you spend complaining are all the things that are going to hold you back from ultimately being successful. And again, that's not just a problem in sales, it's a problem in life, but that's why, again, we think it's so valuable to spend time listening to these philosophers from thousands of years ago, because the mindset that they encourage is one that will create that freedom, that flow, mm-hmm. that allows, with the right training and the right support, our AEs and CSMs to be successful.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big reader of Emerson and people like that, or sort of, not direct successors, but sort of they had some of the same beliefs, the transcendentalists as the Stoics do, with, you know, for me, it's the belief in the individual and the you know, power of the individual. And, you know, they even 150, 170 years ago, they were railing against conformity and, you know, sort of the growing forces within the United States back in the 1840s that were, you know, making people feel they had to conform to get along. And it's like, yeah, it should be, given everything that we have at our fingertips in terms of technology and ability to access other people, is the conformity should be the least thing we want people to do.
Well, I mean, to reflect on LinkedIn for a second, right? I think if you were trying to create content on LinkedIn, right, the more you conform to what people expect, the less engagement you're going to get on any of your content, right? The more that you show your own individualism, the more that you stake out interesting positions, that you challenge widely held beliefs, the more that people are going to be engaged by your content, want to comment, want to share, want to follow you. And again, I think it's the same in sales as well. The more interesting your conversations are with your customers, the more you're able to challenge them over time, the more that you're able to bring them ideas they couldn't come up with on their own, the more successful you're going to be, right? And you can only get there, again, with the right mindset and also a sense of empowerment that that you have the opportunity to do that.
Yeah. So one thing I hear on occasion is, and I think this is just on preface, but I think it's dead wrong, is on LinkedIn is people saying, look, people just want to, in sales, you know, people just want to know how to, right? Sort of the hack mode. You know, they just want to know how to. They don't want to know the why. And I'm like, well, of course they do. People want to know the why because that helps them understand the how. And yet we have all this focus on the how. And, you know, sort of this philosophical underpinning, you know, people might denigrate by trying to call it theory or whatever. Hey, I mean, my own experiences over, you know, the thousands of sellers that I know personally is those who are most consistently good at what they do have a philosophy about what they do, a personal philosophy. It's not just, you know, I've got a checklist of things I follow. They've got a rationale for how they act. And that's why, yeah, having an underlying philosophy like stoicism or whatever is I think very important for sellers, somebody to have something like that, that informs their actions about why they're doing what they do and understanding why customers do what they do.
Completely. And, you know, I reflect back on the earlier years in my sales career and I didn't have that perspective necessarily. And it was focused mm-hmm. on the how and tactically, how do you ask good discovery questions and tactically, how should you set up a best action commitment or a minimal acceptable action? And as you get the experience, you're able to zoom out and pattern match across your career and the times that I was doing well and the best deals and partnerships that I developed happened because of this, and you kind of create your theory on selling. And so our challenge as managers here is to help encourage the team members who are newer in their career or earlier in their sales career to identify their own theory. It's not to instill that upon them. And, you know, as we've mentioned many times, like we have a sales methodology and we have sales competencies that we encourage everyone to adopt. Mm-hmm. But zooming out to what you talk about, the why is like, why is this important to me? Why am I good at this? And why am I the right person for this role? And when that comes in, and whether it's from stoicism or some other philosophical grounding, that's what really is going to allow someone to level up in their sales career.
Yeah. And I wrote about this on LinkedIn, surprise, surprise, not that long ago, which is, I call it as every seller should write their own sales book, right? Not literally a book, but, you know, sit down and write why they do what they do. To your point you just had is have, understand what your philosophy is, why the things you do work for you. And extended is, why do you think customers respond to you in a certain way? Granted, we know we don't have control over that, but you know, you have a base of experience. What are the things you think you do that elicit those responses and perceptions? And write it down. I mean, I think that it's such an important step for sellers is to intellectualize this. I mean, not to sound too highfalutin, but I think that it's important. It gives you a real grounding in understanding why what you do works or doesn't work.
I mean, to tie that into stoicism, right? I mean, the Stoics are huge fans of journaling, right? Mm-hmm. And reflecting and keeping a journal every day. And I think you could take that idea and turn it into a sales journal, right? Something that right. you reflect on the day. And you know, that person that I told the story about earlier in the podcast, right? One of the things that we did work on was writing down at the end of the day the things that were most important that he needed to focus on tomorrow and the things that didn't go as well today that he can improve on, right? And just that idea of starting and ending your day with some journaling and some reflecting. So yeah, I love the idea of the sales book or a sales journal, as long as it's focused on the things that salesperson controls, right?
Right.
So if the journal is all about how the customer didn't like them, or that their book sucks, or that their quota is too high, or that their manager gives them a hard time, if you feel like it's important to get that out of your system, you could certainly put that in your journal. But the Stoics would argue to focus your journal on your reflections on the day, the things that you controlled, the things that you did well, the things you want to do better, what you learned from it, similar to the call that Tom talked about, so that when you start the day tomorrow, you'll have that, and then you'll be able to move forward.
Yeah. Well, there's one thing from the Daily Stoic I had taken out a long time ago, which applies so directly to sales, and it connects to what we've been talking about, is the quote is, listen and connect with people, don't perform for them. And my belief is that in the hands of many sellers, sales has become very performative. And they're encouraged to do that by some people, which I think, again, is wrong. Because, you're not connecting if people think that you're performing for them. And that performing goes to, pitching, heavy-handed persuasion techniques, and so on. Just the opposite of what increases the odds that the customer will have a good perception of what you're doing.
So again, it's totally true. RingDNA, I'm sure, has data on it as well, right? Like that, literally, the less you perform, the more you listen, the less you talk, the more successful you are at closing deals, right? I mean, it's just like the data is there, right? So you think that someone wants a show, and especially in our virtual world, right? Nobody has the attention span to watch a performance on Zoom, right? If they're not talking, if you don't have them engaged, if they're sitting back, there's too many screens, right? They're looking at their Gmail, they're doing whatever it is that is on their other screen, right? So I think especially in a virtual world, you have to have them talking. You have to be asking those tell me more questions. In my old life before I came to LinkedIn, I worked on the consulting side, there'd be presentations where you would go and try and win a piece of business, and we would talk for 50 of the 60 minutes.
Yep.
And I'd leave it like, well, there's no chance we're going to win this, right? Because all we did was talk, and we didn't learn anything, right? So it's worse, I think, in that space than even in sales. But
well, that's because they have to show how smart they are. They think they're being paid for how smart they are.
Certainly not when you're trying to pitch someone's business. And so, we love the ability to be able to look at how much silence there is on a call to see who's talking more on the call, and then to look for those great layered questions like tell me more, so that because you can't perform if you're asking questions like that. But one of my favorite quotes on this is from Epictetus. He says, we have two ears and one mouth so that we can listen twice as much as we speak.
Yep.
Right. So
that's a good one. All right. Well, guys, we sort of run out of time, but this has been fantastic. I love this whole topic of Stoicism, but under philosophy undergirding what you do. Everybody could benefit from it. Some people, it may be religion, that's fine. But something that's, you're intentional about the way you act in the world. I mean, I remember once hearing this interview once with this psychiatrist who was saying, you can't control how you feel, but you can control what you do with the feelings you have. And, it's along the same lines, right? So you're going to have certain things that happen to you. You're going to feel certain ways, but you have a choice about what you're going to do with those. And just being deliberate and intentional is really important.
Yeah. Every minute you worry is a minute you wasted. Right. So,
well, yeah. I mean, I've referenced this on the show before, but I just remember reading the survey results in a news article, I don't know, sometime within the last 5-6 years, where they asked people age 65 and over, what's their biggest regret in life? And the number one answer, I think, was 2/3 of people responded, I worried too much.
Well, thanks for having us on, Andy.
It's been a pleasure.
We love talking about this. Yeah, and if people want to follow us on LinkedIn, we're going to keep talking about Stoicism and sales, so they're welcome to do that.
I'm sure that they will. LinkedIn, we all know where that is.
Awesome.
Dan Horowitz, Tom Eschbacher. And we'll make sure encourage people to follow you as well. So
awesome.
Thank you.
Thanks, Andy.
Okay, friends, that's it for this episode. First of all, I want to thank you for taking the time to listen. I'm so grateful for your support of the show. And I want to thank my guests, Dan Horowitz and Tom Eschbacher, for sharing their insights with us today. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to this podcast, Sales Enablement with Andy Paul, on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. So thank you for your help with that. And as always, thank you so much for investing your time with me today. Until next time, I'm your host, Andy Paul. Good selling, everyone.
Hey, sales strategists. At Revenue.io, we're not just imagining the future of sales, we're building it. We offer the world's most complete platform for revenue teams, and we're featured in the most recent Forrester Waves for both sales engagement and conversation intelligence. With Revenue.io, you can slash call prep time to seconds, guide your reps in real time to have more successful conversations, and after calls, we generate ready-to-send recap emails so sellers can keep deals soaring toward the finish line at light speed. See the future of sales now at Revenue.io.